Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's August 16th, 2021, live to be rebroadcast August 18th, 2021 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. We're here on Mondays at around 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right, so this week I wanted to talk about Lyme disease because with all the humidity and all the rain and all the moisture in the air and on the grass, people have been getting Lyme disease. People have been getting ticks on them. It's very concerning to me. So let's first talk about ticks on people. You can be exposed to ticks all year. So this is help from the CDC. So I'm going to give you some CDC information. So if you want to try to prevent getting ticks on you, you want to know where to expect them. They live on grassy, brushy, or wooded areas or on animals. When you're outside walking your dog, camping, gardening, hunting, getting the mail, anything. If you just step outside, if you just went for a long bike ride and you want to just collapse in the grass, which I did this weekend, you probably want to spray yourself with bug repellent before you do that. And after that, regardless of whether you use bug repellent or not, get somebody to do a tick check on you. You should treat your clothing and gear with products containing, one of the things you can use is 0.5% permethrin. You can treat boots, clothing, camping gear, and you can be protected through several washings. And you can also get permethrin treated clothing and gear that's pre-treated. And then there are EPA registered tick repellents, and some of them are pretty intense, and some of them are actually natural. So they would be things containing DEET, and so DEET we're concerned that it can cause some liver toxicity. Picaridin, there's something called IR3535. Then there's oil of lemon eucalyptus. Now you can get health food store brand bug repellents that have yet lemon eucalyptus in them, which is also supposedly good for mosquitoes. I don't know if they were so good for mosquitoes last night. I mean, I'm trying to sit in my yard and they're just eating me alive. I did spray myself with spray that had lemon eucalyptus in it. I might have missed my shoulder or they just didn't care. I'm not sure.
The mosquitoes have teeth this time.
Teeth.
Yeah, they do.
So then there's also 2-undecanone. And you can find a product that best suits your needs. Follow the instructions. And it's a good idea not to use products containing oil of lemon eucalyptus or PMD on children under 3 years old. The other thing that they didn't mention here is Bio-UD. So Bio-UD is an extract of tomato that's found to be very good on ticks. It's supposed to work as well as DEET, and it doesn't have the toxic side effects. It doesn't smell great. Doesn't smell terrible, but doesn't smell great, but it's really helpful for ticks. So, of course, be careful of wooded and brushy areas, high grass and leaf litter. So people who are cleaning up their yards and working in their yards all the time need to be really careful. Try to walk in the center of trails. If you brush by trees or plants or brush on the side of the trail, you can pick up ticks. So you want to examine gear and your pets. They can ride home on clothing and pets and then attach to a person later. So make sure you examine your pets, your coats, your day packs, anything you carry with you. And also shower soon after being outdoors. If you shower within 2 hours of coming indoors, it can reduce your risk of getting Lyme disease and reduce the risk of other tick-borne illness. And use a washcloth. Use something that you scrub with. Don't just use your hands because if you scrub using a washcloth, if there are little ticks that are attached to you, you might just they might not be burrowed that far into you, and you'll just wipe them off. So you can use a washcloth, you can use a shower puff, use something scrubby if you want to use lovely soap, you know, body lotion that has scrubbing stuff in it. You can use that too, and it can smell nice too. Absolutely check your body for ticks after being outdoors. You want to do a full body check from head to toe. especially when you return from tick-infested areas, which includes your own backyard. You can use a handheld or full-length mirror to view all parts of your body or get someone you love to look at you in places that you can't see. One of the places that people miss is behind their knees. That you'll have somebody who has Lyme disease. They come in and they're definitely diagnosed with Lyme disease and they didn't even realize that they had an erythema migraines rash in the back of their knee. Classic place for a tick to bite you. It's easy to reach. If the tick is on the ground, it can easily crawl up. It's a nice crevice to hang out in and they attach there. And it's soft skin. It's easy for them to get onto. Check under your arms, in and around your ears, inside your belly button, back of the knees, as I said, in and around your hair, between your legs, in your crotch, in your inguinal region, and around your waist, in your intertriginous zones, the zones that fold over folds, in any folds in your body. So these are all places to check. So those are good things to check on. All right, so let's go back to here. All right, so that's checking for ticks on people. Now we want to check for ticks on pets. So when you're looking for ticks on pets, dogs, right? Yeah, dogs are susceptible to both tick bites and tick-borne illness, and there are not vaccines available for most of the tick-borne diseases dogs can get, and they don't keep dogs from bringing ticks into your home, so you want to use a tick preventative product on your dog. Tick bites in dogs can be hard to detect because, you know, fur and hair. And they may not have signs of tick-borne illness for 7 to 21 days or longer after a tick bite. So you have to keep an eye on your dog for changes in their behavior or appetite. And you can talk to your vet about the best tick prevention products for your dog and the tick-borne diseases that are in your area. You want to check your pets for ticks daily, especially after they spend time outdoors. If you find a tick on your pet, remove it right away and reduce the tick habitat in your yard. And we'll talk about that too. So cats are very sensitive to a variety of chemicals. Don't put any tick repellent stuff on your cats until you talk to your vet. So you check your dog for pets in and around their ears, around their eyelids, because it's an easy place for the ticks to grab onto because there's no hair there. Under their front legs, another spot that doesn't have a lot of hair. Between their legs, between the back legs, and between their toes, and around their tail. Anywhere, again, it's sort of like the intertriginous zones, anywhere that there's little breaks in their fur you want to check for. So that's dogs. All right, now, your yard, you want to have a tick-safe zone through your when you landscape. So one of the things you want to look for, make your yard less attractive to ticks. There's some simple landscaping ticks that tricks to keep ticks out. Tall grasses and brush at the edge of lawns, not just your actual lawn, but at the edge of lawns. You want to keep those down too. You want to have a 3-foot-wide barrier of wood chips or gravel between lawns and wooded areas and around patios and play equipment. And that way, the ticks are less likely to come into recreational areas. They don't like the wood chips as much as they like the grass. Mow the lawn a lot. Keep the leaves raked. And then after you rake, raking is a way to get bitten by ticks. So you have to check yourself really carefully. Dealing with piles of wet leaves, great way to get ticks. So you have to really check yourself after you do that. Stack your wood neatly in a dry area because one of the problems with wood piles is rodents and ticks feed on rodents. So you want to keep your playground equipment, decks, and patios away from the yard edges and trees. Put them in a sunny location if possible. If you took a tick and you put it on this desk right here, I know you can't see the desk, but you put the desk right, put it on the desk right here and just left it there, it would die. All right. So when you have ticks sitting in a very sunny spot, if they are sitting on a table or they're on recreation equipment that's baking in the sun, they're going to die. They don't like hot and dry. They like to hide in cool and moist. Relatively cool and moist, but where there's moisture, where there's a way to hide from heat, that is where the ticks are going to be. So if you're in a very sunny spot, you're less likely to see ticks. That's why Lyme disease, although not unheard of in more of the desert states, in like Arizona, for example, you don't see it as much. There are other things that you see, but you don't see Lyme disease as much out there. And you don't see Lyme disease as much in hot climates, even though Florida is very, there's a lot of moisture in Florida. It's very humid. They don't really worry about Lyme disease there like they do up here. I think that you need a bit cooler temperature, or you need consistent dampness, and it shouldn't be too hot because they don't do well in heat. So you can apply tick pesticides if you want. You have to decide on what your comfort level is to the level of chemicals you might use. If you apply acaricide in your area, there are regulations around it. And the other thing you can do is get a professional pesticide company to come. And there are professional pesticide companies that come that use only natural ingredients. So that's something to look at as well. So that's something to think about. All right. So if you should unfortunately catch Lyme disease, I wanted to talk about, what you do about Lyme disease. I talk about this from time to time. And I figured that this was the time of year to do it just because I've seen more patients getting tick bites, getting sick with Lyme disease. I'm testing people and they are coming up positive for Lyme disease. So I wanted to give some advice on how to treat it. So when you treat Lyme disease, this is a time when even a lot of naturopathic physicians will recommend antibiotics. I have some patients that even though I tell them, get yourself some antibiotics, they won't. There are some people who are just any sort of biomedical treatment, they just won't do it. And there's nothing you can do about that. So you give them natural medicine treatments and hope for the best. But if you have acute Lyme disease, my opinion is that it's a good idea to get antibiotics. I do it. And if you talk to Dr. Horowitz, who's been an expert on treating chronic Lyme for many, many years, he practices in Hyde Park, New York. He says that using antibiotics, the concerns about using antibiotics, the detriments are far outweighed by catching Lyme disease. That the long-term neurological issues are way worse than any digestive upset you're going to get from using long-term antibiotics. And long-term antibiotics, you can manage by taking good probiotics, by taking probiotics that can't be killed by your antibiotic, for example, Saccharomyces boulardii. And it's true that you can get issues with your digestive system by taking long-term antibiotics, but those are more easily managed than the long-term neurological effects of chronic Lyme disease. And chronic Lyme disease can be a scourge. It can be really, really bad. So when you, if you are acutely diagnosed with Lyme disease, you will likely be recommended antibiotics. Especially if you have a naturopath who's telling you that you should go get some. In the state of Connecticut, of course, we can't prescribe antibiotics, so we're going to be sending you to the walk-in or to your primary care physician or an infectious disease specialist to get your antibiotics. If you're in a state where naturopathic physicians can prescribe, then they'll prescribe for you. And so in acute early stages, they can work really nicely. So that before the Lyme disease becomes really disseminated, you can get antibiotics and they'll catch it early. The first drug you'll usually be prescribed is doxycycline, and it's a good idea to have a minimum of 3 weeks along with taking Saccharomyces boulardii. Saccharomyces boulardii is a probiotic yeast that cannot be killed by antibiotics, unless they're antibiotics that can kill fungus, because they are a yeast. They're not Candida. Candida is the yeast that we think of that gives you, I have chronic yeast infections. No, Saccharomyces boulardii is also a yeast. The only thing it has in common with Candida is that they're both yeasts in that they are one-celled organisms that reproduce by budding. But Saccharomyces boulardii is a probiotic. And all that means is that it's an organism that lives inside you and does wonderful things for you when it's inside you. Saccharomyces boulardii is a classic probiotic that can really help with diarrhea, regardless of the cause of diarrhea. But it also really helps to maintain good gut health while you're taking an antibiotic. If you finish your course of antibiotics and your symptoms return, it's a good idea to ask your prescribing practitioner if they'll provide another course of antibiotics. Sometimes they won't, and that's very frustrating. If you had symptoms, you know, you had brain fog, fatigue, joint pain, perhaps digestive upset, weakness, all of the things that usually go along with Lyme disease, and you, as soon as you start taking the antibiotics, you feel better, and then you take the antibiotics and you finish your course and your symptoms all come back. I have actually had patients who their doctors say to them, if you aren't well after three weeks of antibiotics, if you get sick again, you have something else. And I'm like, I cannot believe it. And these are like these are very rational people who are like, I don't understand. I have the same symptoms I had when I started the course of antibiotics. Why won't they give me more antibiotics? And so if the doctor absolutely refuses to give them another course of antibiotics, I try to get them to another doctor, while all the while treating them with natural medicine to help them out as well. So there's during and after your treatment with antibiotics, there are things that we like to give too. So garlic. Now, garlic is something we like to tell people if you're not like me and you can't do garlic because it upsets your stomach. If you love garlic and you can eat garlic, it's a great idea. This is the time of year to find the basil and start making the pesto because the garlic's really good for you. And garlic, we use high-dose garlic to kill Lyme disease. So if you're eating garlic right along, you might be less likely to have bad symptoms from Lyme disease, or you might even get a tick bite and not get Lyme disease. So if you're eating garlic right along through the summer, that's something that can help to treat and prevent it. You can eat garlic in your fruit food, or you can get a potent supplement with concentrated allicin. So garlic is Allium sativa, which means it's the Allium group, the Allium genus. The Allium genus contains all your onions and garlic. So Allium sepa is onion and Allium sativa is garlic. I can't remember the other alliums, but your shallots and your leeks and your chives, they are all alliums as well. And they're all in the lily family. So they all contain the compound allicin. And no, it's not spelled like the girl's name. It's spelled A-L-L-I-C-I-N. And so if you smell like an Italian restaurant, you can take one or two tablespoons of chlorophyll a day, which will help. You know, I think Italian restaurants smell very good. I mean, the problem with garlic is I love garlic. It doesn't love me. It's one of those, this is not an aversion. This is an intolerance. And whereas I have an aversion to olives and gristly foods, but I actually have a food intolerance to onions and garlic, where they actually upset my stomach, which is so sad because I like the way they taste. If they're really, really cooked to death, I could eat them. And so, for example, I've been getting these cashews from the food co-op that are everything bagel cashews. So it's the experience of the flavor of everything bagel without the gluten, without the grain, and without the actual onions and garlic. So I can't overdo them, but I can eat them and I'm okay. Okay, so there are other herbs that you can take. So if you smell, like I said, you can take chlorophyll, which can be helpful. It'll mitigate the smell of the garlic. And the other nice thing about chlorophyll is it's a wonderful antioxidant. It's wonderful. It's nice and detoxifying for you. All right. And then there are other herbs you can take. The classic herbs are andrographis. I make a tincture of andrographis, cat's claw, star sarsaparilla, and redroot. So andrographis is known to be, it's greatly used. It's a Chinese herb. It tends to be more of an adrenal tonic, and it's one that's classically used for various viruses. It's also classically used for Lyme disease. And I think it's more of an adrenal tonic than it is antiborrelial. Cat's claw and sarsaparilla, however, are directly antiborrelial. They will help to kill Lyme disease. So cat's claw, Uncaria tomentosa. There's some concern that you need to take TOA free. There are certain constituents that block the performance of the POA, which is the main constituent that works well in cat's claw. So it has to be TOA free to get out of the way of that. The other thing you can do is if you're taking the tincture, you just take more of it. And cat's claw does tend to work regardless of the form that you use. Sarsaparilla. Sarsaparilla is a really nice plant because it tends to taste good. It's one of the things that can be used in root beer. And it is antibacterial. You can use it to kill Lyme disease. And it also is, it's a hormonal balancer. And it is also what we think of as an alterative, something that will help all of the systems of your body be in balance. And then I like to put red root in there. You can use various herbs to cleanse the lymphatics directly. I like to use red root. Red root, also known as New Jersey tea, it's the Ceanothus genus. When I don't have red root, but like if we were out of red root and I have to give somebody a tincture, I will also give them burdock. So burdock is a nice, gentle, but powerful what we call lymphagogue, something that will cleanse your lymphatics. We also have a whole lymphagogue tincture, a tincture that has a bunch of lymphagogues in it, some more powerful than others. So examples of things that are directly lymphagogic that will help to cleanse the lymphatics, because you see, as you're killing Lyme disease, the components of the Lyme are going to be dumped into your lymphatics to be escorted out of the body. So you want that to happen in an efficient manner. And so to make that more efficient, you can take lymphagogues. And so we put red root in this tincture. You can also use things like burdock and wild iris and poke root and stillingia, and which is queen's root, and baptisia. So all of these herbs are they're lymphagogues. Echinacea is also a lymphagogue, just classic good old echinacea. That's a lymphagogue too. It helps to move lymph through your bodies. And lymph, so you have lymph vessels throughout your whole body. They run alongside your veins, and they communicate with your veins. And they mostly have fluid in them, and they have white blood cells in them. And they will carry toxins out of your body and dump them into your liver for detoxifications. So if you want your lymphatics to move healthfully, one of the things you can do is take these lymphagogues. You can also drink plenty of water. You can also get exercise. And if you have acute Lyme disease, we recommend that you exercise as tolerated. If you are absolutely exhausted, then your exercise as tolerated might be a 10-minute slow walk around the yard, or perhaps nothing at all, just sleep. But if you're, as you're recovering, if you can exercise, if you get sweaty exercise, when you sweat, when you heat up your body, Lyme disease spirochetes will die. So if you can heat yourself up, that's helpful. And so anyway, moving the lymphs through your body is a very helpful thing. So Stephen Buhner, I always recommend taking a look at Stephen Buhner's work. Stephen Buhner has been studying Lyme disease for many, many years. He's a great herbalist, and he has some books. And he doesn't use Andrographis catsclaw so much anymore. He uses other herbs, and the herbs he likes to use are Cryptolepis. I said that wrong. He does still use Andrographis, but he doesn't use cat's claw so much. He uses Cryptolepis, Andrographis. He uses plantain and self-heal immediately after a bite. And then ongoing, I've seen him use Cryptolepis and Alcornea. And so he recommends pretty decent doses of those things. And then Dr. Zhang, so I've had some people use Dr. Zhang's protocol. Dr. Zhang's protocol can be pretty intense, and it requires a lot of products. But he's a big proponent of oregano. And I think oregano, the nice thing about oregano oil is it's easy to get. It's easy to get a high carvacrol content oregano oil. Carvacrol is the active ingredient in oregano, and it can kill Lyme disease too. So if you're doing a Lyme protocol, if somebody has ongoing Lyme, I like to give them oregano oil regularly. That's one of the things I like to give, pretty consistently. It has to have a nice carvacrol content. Cinnamon bark and clove essential oils can also be helpful. So you can drink tea with cinnamon bark in it, and you can do cinnamon tincture, and you can do drop doses of clove bud essential oil in your cinnamon bark. Then there's monolaurin. It's a coconut extract. It's been shown to kill Lyme in various morphological forms. So one of the things about Lyme to know about, the Lyme spirochete, Lyme is a spirochete, and it's studied to have various morphological forms. So that means different forms of different shapes. So there's the actual spirochete, which is where if you were to look at the bacterium under a microscope, you'd see that it looks like a little corkscrew. That's why it's called a spirochete. And that form makes it efficient at burrowing into surfaces. So it will go into any weak spots in your body, like your joints, like your brain, like your nerves, like your muscles. So it digs into there and it hangs out. Lime also has an L form. It comes into an L form. It will transform into this L shape. And doxycycline can kill both the spirochete and the L form. And then it is understood to have a cyst form. And the cyst form is harder to treat. And so if people have long-standing Lyme disease and they're being treated with long-term antibiotics, the cyst form is a similar form to the cysts that something like yeast forms. So if you have long-standing candida, you might be treated with an antifungal. Well, there are people who will treat, if they're treating with antibiotics, they might also give an antifungal. And a classic antifungal classic antifungals that are given to break up the cyst form are metronidazole and tinidazole. I've seen tinidazole used more regularly than metronidazole. So you can break up those cysts. And then the other thing that happens with Lyme is that it makes biofilm. And so monolaurin has also been shown to break up biofilm. So what biofilm is, some bacteria will make a protein that surrounds the colony called a biofilm, and it makes it harder for the immune system to get behind the biofilm. And I heard it explained to me that one of the reasons you can have Lyme disease and have a negative test, and one of the reasons you can have that negative test is because Lyme spirochetes make biofilm. And so the biofilm makes it so that the immune system can't see the spirochetes. So you have to break up the biofilm. So one of the ways you can do that is very simply with monolaurin. Monolaurin is a less expensive supplement that you can use that kills Lyme directly and also breaks up the biofilm. You can also use enzymes to break up biofilm. Serrapeptase is one of them, and nattokinase is another one, and lumbrokinase is one. Lumbrokinase is extract of earthworms. And so there are enzymes in earthworms that break up biofilm, and those are all variously used. I also like to use combination homeopathics. So I have a company that makes a nice homeopathic Lyme nosode. So it has a lot of different homeopathics in it that help to drain the body and help the body excrete Lyme disease. They don't work for everyone, but they do work very nicely for some people. I might combine the Lyme nosode with a nosode that helps to drain the lymphatics as well. And sometimes that's all people need to do. I might use those two things plus give them some carvacrol, some oregano oil, and maybe some monolaurin. And that can be their protocol for a while. And then they don't necessarily have to do the garlic unless they'd like to eat the garlic. Because the garlic can be tough on your stomach because it's such a high dose of allicin and it makes you smell. Some people don't mind the smell thing and some people do. So it all depends on the person you're working with. I also like to use combination herbs that allow cells to drain toxins and components from the body, like cimento, banderol, berber, and pinella. There are other herbal combinations that have affinity for various co-infections. So annula can be helpful for babesiosis, and petunia can be helpful for Bartonella. When you use berber and pinella, berber is something that's an herb that helps the liver, lymphatics, and kidneys to drain. So you're helping the emunctories, the organs of detoxification, to help to get the stuff out of your body more readily. And pinella is very nice. It's just a preparation of anise. And so anise, this lovely Pimpinella anisum, you know, anisette liqueur and those Stella Doro cookies that you like to eat.
Mm. Yeah, anise. Yeah, those are good.
Those are good. Anyway, so this is a preparation of anise. And anise, this preparation of anise, pinella, helps to detox from the nerves. And I will sometimes use pinella, not even for Lyme disease. There's somebody who needs their nerves to be detoxed. I'll give them pinella to take to see if that helps them. So we were talking before about heating up the body. Saunas and infrared saunas can help to kill bacteria, and so can sweaty exercise if you can tolerate it. If you can raise your body temperature as much as possible, if you can get up to around 102 degrees, you can kill some ticks. And so people who can tolerate it, I tell them to get outside and get on their bikes or, you know, go running, or if they can tolerate it. If you don't feel well enough to do that, then of course don't do it. But you can do an amount of exercise that you can tolerate. And if you can't tolerate exercise, you can heat yourself up in other ways. If you don't have a sauna or an infrared sauna, you can get in a hot bath. Or if you don't have a bathtub, you can take a hot shower and stay in there for as long as you can. If you have to alternate with cold so that you can tolerate the heat better, that's fine to do. If you're in a very hot bath, make sure you have a cold washcloth nearby so that you can sponge off your face and sponge off your head so you don't get lightheaded. You can get a bowl and fill it with ice and water and put a washcloth in it and just keep wiping off your face as needed. You can also have a spray bottle that has a few drops of peppermint essential oil in it and spray your face so that you stay cool. And you'll be able to tolerate the heat longer if you do that. And of course, if you're in a hot bath, have some water to drink at a temperature that you prefer. Probably better anywhere from room temperature to cold, whichever is your preparation. You probably don't want to be drinking hot water if you're sitting in a hot bath. That can help to heat you up, but I'd also have some room temperature or cold water nearby. Not everybody likes to drink cold water. I'm a cold water person. A lot of people prefer to drink their water room temperature, and that's perfectly fine. It's whatever your preference is. And of course, in Chinese medicine, they say you really shouldn't be consuming very cold food. Very cold food is taxing to the spleen, it makes you cold and it encourages dampness. So in Chinese medicine, they recommend room temperature to warmer foods. And I think there's some truth to that. If you do too much cold raw food, it's not good for you. All right. So there's this thing called the Yerrish-Herxheimer reaction. So that's an interesting reaction. What happens is if you're taking an antimicrobial substance, you break down the microorganisms. The microorganisms open up in your system. They're no longer functional, but they have toxins inside them. They can have neurotoxins inside them. And so your body normally can use the liver, kidneys, and lymphatics to escort those substances out of the body. But if you have a whole bunch of antimicrobials on board and you kill a whole bunch of microorganisms all at once, you can have a whole bunch of microorganisms die at the same time, and now you have all these toxins floating around your body, and you can get a response to that. You might feel tired or feverish or achy or nauseous or any number of symptoms that you can get, more joint pain. So if that happens, if you're taking an antimicrobial for your tick-borne illness and then you get a Herxheimer reaction, you can go ahead and there are things you can do about it. One of the first things we tell you to do is if you have a Herxheimer reaction is to stop whatever antimicrobial you're taking. If you're taking an antibiotic, you probably shouldn't do that because you want to, the concern with an antibiotic because you're using one substance is that you can develop antibiotic resistant strains. So you want to eradicate as much of the microorganism as you can. So if you're taking an antibiotic, and you have a Herxheimer reaction, depends on how bad the Herxheimer reaction is. Sometimes you do have to stop the antibiotic, and you should talk with your practitioner about that. And then when you have the Herxheimer reaction, then you rest, you drink plenty of water, you can take Epsom salt baths, and then you can take Lymphagogues, things that help to move the liver, lymphatics, and kidneys that help them to work better. One of the things we'll do is if you're taking berberine pinella, we'll have you take regular doses of those. If you are not taking those, if you have a lymphagogue tincture, we'll have you take more of that. And we'll have you, make sure to not eat sugar and just drink lots of fluids and sweat if at all possible. And then you wait until your Herxheimer reaction is done before putting the antimicrobials back on board, because your body obviously had a little bit of a tough time detoxifying those substances. And that's not unusual to have that happen. So you have to remember that you may not just have Lyme disease, that there are other tick-borne illnesses such as babesiosis. Babesiosis is, it's a parasite. It's an intracellular parasite. It's similar to malaria, which is why sometimes you'll get hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for babesiosis. So that's one of the things that they actually give. They also give other antimicrobials like etovaquone. Mepron, which is an anti-malarial. So if you have babesiosis, you'll often be given etovaquone plus azithromycin, and that's a good treatment for babesiosis. And you're usually given that for just a week. And if you have babesiosis, it's quite likely you also have Lyme disease, so you'll be treated for that as well. Bartonella For Bartonella, you might be given various other antibiotics, and there are different herbs that treat Bartonella. Like, we like to give Hatunia for Bartonella. We also like to give Resveratrol for it. Resveratrol is a wonderful extract, wonderful antioxidant extract that's found in peanuts. It's found in grape skins. And Bartonella, you might be given something like rifampin. You might also be given doxycycline. So there's a variety of antibiotics you might be given for Bartonella. Anaplasma and Ehrlichiosis, they're very similar. They're just slightly different species, and they tend to cause more dramatic symptoms than Lyme disease. And if you, with Lyme disease can exist in your body at a slow burn. It'll come on slowly, and then you'll be sick for a while. Anaplasma and Ehrlichiosis, if you have either of those, you generally get pretty sick pretty quick. Like, you'll get a high fever, and you'll have a lot of the symptoms of Lyme disease, but you'll have a higher fever, and you'll be more dramatically ill. And doxycycline can treat those, so you'll usually be given a doxycycline or a similar tetracycline for those entities. And then Rickettsia is Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. So I know you're thinking, we're not in the Rocky Mountains. Why am I worried about Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever? Because the ticks came out here. We have airplanes. Mm. We have people who travel. So Rickettsia is in, Rickettsia is present in this area. And I have seen people get it. People come back positive, and I ask them, so did you go to Colorado? No. Did you go out west? No. Did you go to Arizona? No. Did you go to the mountains? Did you go to Utah? No, I didn't go to Utah. Did you cross the Mississippi? No. I did go to Philadelphia the other day. Well, no, that wouldn't do it. So there's Rickettsia in this area because it's moved out this way, and some of the ticks travel. And if it's a good spot for a tick to hang out, it's going to hang out. So you do see people with Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever out here. So in naturopathic medicine, we believe that it is important to keep treating tick-borne illness until you are well. We will not look at you and go, all right, you took antibiotics for 3 weeks, your symptoms are back, that means you have something else, goodbye. We're not going to do that to you. We are going to treat you until you are well or until you get sick of us. Really. I mean, really, if a patient is not well, I don't throw them out of my practice. I try to figure out every possible thing that I can. Sometimes the issue is that whatever they have going on is a long-term thing, and it really is going to take a long time to treat. And the other thing that I do is, if I can't figure it out, I try to get advice from other practitioners, and I try to send them to other practitioners. So if I haven't been successful in treating your Lyme disease, I'm going to send you to other, because I don't specialize. I do a lot of work with Lyme disease, and I feel like I'm pretty versed as a naturopathic physician in treating Lyme disease, but I can't give you antibiotics, and it's not the only thing that I treat. So I will send you to a Lyme literate doctor that can prescribe. And there are many of those in New England. There are some that are convenient and local, and some that are a little further away. And if you just can't get around your Lyme disease, it's a good idea to have a visit with one of them. One issue is they sometimes don't take insurance, and it can be expensive, but sometimes you can work things out with them so that you can go and see them. But they can be well worth seeing because they'll have a protocol for you that will often be very helpful. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. But they do have a lot of tricks up their sleeve, and they can prescribe long-term antibiotics for you if they have prescriptive authority. So, I will definitely, I'm not going to give up on you. And whatever's going on with you, I'm not going to give up on you. And so even if it means I'm going to send you to a different practitioner, because my goal is not to treat you myself. My goal is that you should be well. And if my role was I sent you to the right doctor and then you got better, that's a win for me. I'm still going to get business out of that because, I figured out the right things. So somebody's going to send somebody to me and say, she knew what to do. She'll know the right thing for you, even if it's not her. So, and I think that's the way everybody should be. You should never be so arrogant to think that you have all the answers. One of my answers is that I am a traffic director. And here's me with the semaphores, right? You go here, you go here, you go here. And, there are people who are more expert at certain things than I am. I also have chosen not to do body work anymore because my time with you is better spent using my my brain. And there are, we have wonderful body workers in the area, people who can do massage therapy, physical therapy, chiropractic, hello, Bill Damaris, and all kinds of wonderful body therapies, acupuncture. There are so many people in the area who can do that. And so I'll recommend that to you. And I'm one of those people. I think that physical medicine is something that everybody should take advantage of. Okay. So... treating Lyme disease can feel overwhelming at times because it can affect so many systems of your body. If you continue to get symptoms such as cardiovascular or other neurological symptoms, make sure to get care and see specialists if you need to. So you may need to see a cardiologist. You may need to see a neurologist. You know, whatever specialist is going to be helpful to you. And also, it's a good idea to have a Lyme literate doc in your camp. Now, in terms of your diet, you want to eat, there are certain ways you want to eat to help you with Lyme disease. So there are dietary changes that you can use to help you if you have Lyme disease. Okay. Let's see if I can find this. All right. So, you want to make sure that you're eating good foundation foods. You want to assess your diet and make sure you're not eating stuff that that are troublemakers. So things that so this is going to be really shocking to you. The things that are going to make it harder for you to heal from Lyme disease. Wait for it. Number one, sugar.
Yeah.
If you're eating too much sugar, sugar slows down the functioning of your immune system. It causes dysbiosis. It makes it so that your gut has a higher proportion of unfriendly bacteria in it and a lower proportion of beneficial probiotic bacteria in it. It raises your blood sugar, and which therefore it raises your insulin, so it's going to raise inflammatory compounds, and you're not going to feel as well. If you use processed or packaged foods that have additives and a lot of ingredients, remember, one of the things you want to happen is that you want your liver and your lymphatics to be working at an optimal level. And when you eat foods that have a lot of ingredients in them, two things can happen. One of them is your body's going to look at them and go, I have to get this out of the body. So it's going to take up the resources of your emunctories, those organs that help to get rid of extra toxins from your body. So that's one of the things, that one of the issues. The other thing is that when you eat food that's not food, your body's going to look at them as foreign, and it might mount an immune response to it. So if you're putting additives into your body, you want your immune system to be available to fight the tick-borne illness. And if you are eating food that's not food, your immune system is going to be reacting to those. It's not going to be as available to fight the tick-borne illness. So eating fresh, whole foods that don't have a lot of ingredients in them. Trans and hydrogenated fats. Those fats are not useful to the substance of your body. If you eat trans and hydrogenated fats, they can be incorporated into your cell membranes and your cells won't work as well. You having cells that are compromised because you have this tick-borne illness in your body, especially neurological tissue. So if you're rebuilding your cells by eating, you know, if you're eating deep fried food that has trans fat in it, your cell membranes, your nerve cell membranes are going to have these trans fats incorporated into them. And when you don't have fluid cell membranes that are made of polyunsaturated fats or essential fats, you're not going to be able to have as good cellular communication. That nutrients aren't going to be able to get in and out of the body to help to heal the cells. So it's a good idea to stay away from deep fried things, from snacky foods that have been deep fried. And anything that says it has trans or hydrogenated fats in it, you might like packaged cookies and pastries can have that in it. Common allergens. If you know you're allergic to something, you might want to take it out of your diet. So you have to assess what your allergens might be. If you eat a food and you don't feel good when you eat that food, you should probably not eat it. So wheat and gluten, of course, are common allergens. Not for everybody, but for some people. If you are eating wheat and gluten and you think you don't have a problem with it, then try to stay with organic whole wheat or even eat ancient wheat. Or ancient wheat analogs like spelt or einkorn. And they haven't been hybridized in the way that modern wheat has been, so they tend to be less allergenic. If you have a gluten intolerance, it's a good idea not to eat gluten. Common allergens could be eggs or fish or milk or dairy. Now, fish, if you're not allergic to fish, fish is a good thing to eat because it has essential fatty acids. Likewise, eggs. If you have free-range eggs and you're not allergic to eggs, that can be helpful. Dairy. The issue with dairy, dairy is not necessary to life unless you are a nursing babe of whatever species the dairy is coming out of. You don't have to eat dairy at all. If you love dairy and dairy makes you feel good, then consider doing grass-fed dairy. Otherwise, you might want to consider not having it. Peanuts. Peanuts may or may not be a problem for you if you think they are. There are other nuts that you can eat. Tree nuts can also be a problem. They are a problem for some people. They are not a problem for others. They're a very easy way to get minerals and fiber and essential fatty acids. So I don't tell people not to eat them unless they know they're allergic to them. Shellfish can be an allergen. Again, that's one of those things that shellfish and crustaceans, you might, if you're allergic to it, don't eat it. And something that if you're not allergic to it, it can be good for you. Corn is another one. So now we're in Connecticut and it's that corn time of year. If you're allergic to corn, it's good idea to stay away from it. If you're not allergic to it, it might be very nice for you because it does have lutein in it. And the local organic corn is wonderful around here. It's not sprayed. That you can get unsprayed corn around here and it can have lovely antioxidants in it. If you tend to react to it, then I wouldn't get it. So this is something that I say all the time. If you eat a food and you don't feel good when you eat the food or you can't digest the food, don't eat the food. Whatever it is, I don't care what it is. If it's broccoli or if it's kale or if it's chocolate or if it's dairy, doesn't matter if a piece of paper says you're allergic to it or not. If you have an allergy test and you have zero food allergies on the allergy test, but you know that every time you eat hazelnuts, kiwi fruit, and wheat, you feel sick, don't eat the hazelnuts, kiwi fruit, and wheat. It's silly because isn't it possible that we don't know everything? That some of medicine is observation, and it's not just observation by me as your physician, it's observation by you of your own body. If you are doing something to yourself that makes you not feel good, it's a good idea to stop doing that thing, whatever it is. And if you are fighting an illness, especially then, if you find that you have trouble digesting something, remember that that's going to affect your entire digestive system. And you want your digestive system to be working well because you want to be able to absorb nutrients. You also want to be able to absorb anything that you're taking. If you're taking supplements that are helping you to fight off the illness that you have, you want to be able to absorb them. So if you eat foods that don't work with you, work for you, then it's a good idea to stop them. So gluten, dairy, sugar, unhealthy fats, and you can also do food intolerance testing if you want to. Do eat nutrient-dense, anti-inflammatory foods. Lyme is a major stressor and takes a toll on the body. So shifting your focus to foods that have a lot of nutrients in them is going to be really helpful. So leafy greens, veggies in general, berries, healthy fats and omega-3s like avocado, salmon, and flaxseed oil. Eat foods that are high in fiber. The nice thing about fiber is that that's going to make your digestive system work more efficiently and more quickly. If you have a lot of fiber on board, remember how we talked about how you can get that Herxheimer reaction. So remember that your body dumps toxins into the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system ultimately dumps into your liver, and the bile in your liver will dump into your digestive system, and you're going to be excreting some of those toxins through your stool. So if you eat a lot of fiber, your stool is going to work more efficiently. If you can get yourself to the point where you're having at least one or more bowel movements a day, that's going to really be helpful to you. And the way that you do that is to eat plenty of fiber. So what's fiber? Fiber doesn't just mean taking psyllium, although it can. You can do psyllium seeds. You can eat chia seeds. I have a mixture. I have chia seeds, flax seeds, and hemp seeds in my house. I also eat nuts and seeds because thank goodness I'm not allergic to them. And I eat fruit. This time of year, the fruit is wonderful. There's peaches and cherries, and there's still some blueberries out. There's plums. Grapes are starting to come out. We've got some wild grapes in our yard now. And so if I eat a good serving of fruit a day, that helps me. And then, of course, eating lots of vegetables. Vegetables are a huge source of fiber. So So eating fibrous things throughout the day. And if you're eating grains, you want to eat 100% whole grain. So oats can be helpful. Quinoa, which is a pseudo grain, has a lot of fiber in it. Brown rice has some fiber in it. And, you know, other pseudo grains like amaranth and buckwheat can be helpful. So consuming a lot of fiber is going to help you in your path to getting rid of some of the toxins as you're breaking down tick-borne illness products. So you want to make sure that your absorption is good. There's this concept of leaky gut, the idea that your digestive system has been breached and that you're absorbing things into your system or things that are leaving your digestive system that shouldn't be because your digestive system has become somewhat porous. They're talking about intestinal permeability. That means that your intestines, the tight junctions between the villi may have been breached, and so you're going to get compounds that shouldn't be going into your digestive system or going into your bloodstream that just shouldn't be there. And so you decrease intestinal permeability by eating really healthy food, by eating food with antioxidants in it, like fruits and vegetables, by consuming fiber so that if you have poor quality cells, those cells get sloughed off and you can reabsorb them and redigest them and they'll turn back into you. You'll use them as a source of protein. If you consume healthy foods, so say you have some fermented cabbage or you consume foods that have glutamine in them, which fermented cabbage has, and you will have the glutamine will help to restore your digestive system. You can also take supplements that have glutamine in them, and they're really good for soothing your digestive system. You can drink things like marshmallow root tea or comfrey tea or slippery elm. All of those things are going to help to heal that digestive lining, as will N-acetylglucosamine and hyaluronic acid. Those are all things that will that will be helpful. Gluten, you have to remember, can be broken down to the peptides gliadin and glutenin, and those constituents, not the bread not the actual just straight up bread, it's those constituents that irritate your digestive system and can make your digestive system more porous. Also, if your intestines are permeable, you might get some leakage of toxins and microbes back into your digestive system, back into your bloodstream. And so you have to remember that about 70% of the immune system is your digestive system. So Lyme and Co infections can reside in the digestive system. So if you're healing your digestive system and you're eating a lot of fiber and you're eating a lot of foods with antioxidants in them, you're going to help to move those toxins and those microorganisms out of your body and help to keep your digestive system healthy. Fiber, as we said, it acts as a broom to sweep the intestines, but also helps to support the microbiome, helps to support the good bacteria. So remember your celery, your broccoli, your legumes, lentils and beans, your flax seeds, hemp seeds, chia seeds. So the other thing, of course, to remember about tick-borne illness is stress. Stress is really not good for Lyme disease. The more rest you can get, if your digestive system can be calm, if you yourself can be calm, you're going to have any cortisol that you have is going to be available to run your immune system and not to run your fight or flight. So the more rest you can get, the better you're going to do with tick-borne illness. So reducing your stress is very, very important. And you can meditate, you can do yoga, you can take more naps, you can do leisure walks in nature, you can sit in your yard. Of course, if you're sitting in your yard, make sure you do tick checks and that you cover yourself in tick prevention sprays and things. So there are other things that can be helpful to be preventative for Lyme disease. I like recommending people, as I told you, I like to tell people to do garlic regularly, especially in the summer, because the ticks won't like you as much. Well, it's not that the ticks won't like you as much. It's more that garlic can kill Lyme disease. So if you have garlic on board, you're less likely to suffer with it, and you might get a minor case and the garlic will be enough to take care of it. And if you, and the other thing is astragalus. People take astragalus ongoing to help to prevent Lyme disease. So that can be a really helpful thing. Well, the only thing with astragalus is something of an immune stimulant. So if you actually come down with Lyme disease, it's a good idea to stop the astragalus and use other things. Your andrographis, cat's claw, your cemento, your banderol, your berber, pinella, your homeopathics. Those all can be helpful. But astragalus is something you can take ongoing if you're concerned about getting Lyme disease. And once again, I wanted to remind you about using the insect repellent. Whenever you're going to be outside in nature, it's a good idea to use insect repellent. If you want to go natural, rose geranium and that bio-UD I mentioned, which is a tomato extract, those are my favorites. If you must use DEET because that's all you have, use it and then wash well and eat lots of fiber and maybe take some liver herbs and liver-friendly foods after you use the DEET. So yeah, I really wanted to talk about Lyme disease now because it is so concerning this time of year, and people are more likely to catch Lyme disease this time of year. It's been a very concerning thing. So here's some. So I'm gonna wrap up, I think. Let's see. So here's some things to remember. Garlic and astragalus can help to prevent Lyme disease. So can keeping your grass short, checking for ticks as soon as you come in from outside, and taking showers right away, and regular use of insect repellent. Like any other illness, you'll do better with tick-borne illness the healthier you are in general. So, so keep that grass short and do your tick checks. All right. So I'm good to go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.